cake. What am I snatching?
A briefcase.
You said you wanted simple for your first job back.
I will ruin your life the way you ruin mine.
Dude, I don't even know you.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of our Tickets for Two podcast, where we aim to provide our unique insights on films and TV shows. And today we are talking about Brad Pitt's Bullet Train.
That's right, Andrew. Today we are discussing Bullet Train because California cannot create their own high-speed rail for the past 25 years. So we're moving to Japan. We're going to do this one in Japan. It's a bunch of assassins on a train, and they try to kill each other. That's essentially the whole movie. Beautiful Japanese neon lights in this film. Andrew, we saw this one together. What did you think of The Bullet Train?
It was our first movie that we've seen since the beginning of this pod. It was great, though. Leaving the theater, I had a great time with it. I think it was okay. It was fun, colorful, bright. The action was there. I had fun with it. I definitely enjoyed my time. What about you?
Yeah, this movie is, to me, the exact definition of style over substance. It's pretty funny at times. It's got some good action scenes. It's worth the watch. But, you know, is it a bullet train? No, it's like a 45-mile-per-hour train. It's like a light rail or like a bus system. Like, it's pretty fast at times, but a lot of slowing down and stopping. So, I enjoyed it just like you did. I would watch a sequel. I would love a sequel. But at the same time, it felt more like a concept than an actual well-written film. But there's some great characters in this movie, and I think that's where we should just start off, because it's just so colorful and stylish, and the performances are, I think, fantastic.
I think it was great, and coming from the director, David Leitch, I believe is how you pronounce his name,
yeah.
He definitely comes from a background of action fighting, stunt doubling, and now directing. I know like his first movie that he did well with was John Wick, which he co-directed. Mm-hmm. Sadly, he didn't get credit for that. But that was a great start, and I think that's how David Leitch should definitely sort of promote himself, is being the go-to guy for these kind of action thriller films. Brad Pitt's
stunt double, right?
Yeah. For many years. He started Fight Club. Yeah, he started in Fight Club.
Yeah, way back. And then he,
so I don't know. It was great. We're talking about all the characters, especially the most random one of all, Karen Fukuhara from The Boys. She was just chilling there in the whole movie, man. Like, I actually thought she was going to do something like actually interesting.
Yeah, let's just get right into spoilers then with this film. That one probably did catch us off guard. I don't know if she was in the movie, but when she showed up, I was like, she's got to be one of the secret assassins. And no, she's just a cart attendant. It's just cameo. Just a cameo.
Which is kind of funny. Like, it kind of throws you off guard because, like, you're expecting her to do something, but then she doesn't. So I think it works, but I was hoping for a little more.
Yeah, I think it was a character like that, because there was other cameos with Channing Tatum. That was funny. Ryan Reynolds, obviously, at the end, Sandra Bullock. Like, those were all funny, but because Karen Fukuhara has, you know, super action scenes in The Boys, and she's kind of like a fan favorite right now, you would have thought like, oh shit, she's here, she's gonna go crazy and do all this like wild, you know, shit and all that. But you know, she just, what is she dies or something. she ends up lying next to Bad Bunny on the on the back end of the bullet train,
which I felt really bad for. But you're right, you have a good point there. I think me in particular, and I think maybe other people too, we have her as image from like The Boys, and
yeah,
we did expect some, you know, kick ass scenes. But yeah, no, I get that. It was definitely something that we came in already imagining ourselves. But
exactly.
I don't know. I think right away, what I was gonna say is this movie felt incredibly predictable from like the first 5 minutes of the film. I remember the beginning of it when Brad Pitt's like walking and talking on the phone about his quote unquote bad luck. That right away, to me, I think we've seen that trope all the time where like they immediately give away the whole plot of the movie in the beginning, because that kind of tells you right away he was going to change his luck around, or the whole film was going to be about his good luck. And then they called him Ladybug as like the good luck charm. So you already knew where this film was going to go, which and then you have the other girl, was Joey King. How, like, her whole thing in the movie was about having good luck. And, you know, that was going to turn around and, you know, bad luck and all this. So, I don't know. I felt like it was kind of predictable, which is why I felt like it was an okay movie. But, I don't know. Did that kind of throw you off?
No, there were some interesting twists that caught me off guard, but I think it's less so predictable than it is just not engaging. The story itself just isn't that engaging. Like, these characters are here. Why do I care about them? Why do I care about the story? Why do I care about this briefcase and their motivations? And this film tries to bring that all together in the end, but it doesn't really happen. That's why it just feels more like an idea. There's some, you know, Tarantino, Walmart-esque dialogue. Like, they tried to make it like his kind of film, but it really falls short at times. And that's, to me, where the most improvement needed to be made. It's just the fact that, it's like, why do I care? Why do I care about the story? You know, what's the goal here? What are they trying to do? And it's just, you know, just they just wanted the cool action. They just wanted the cool neon lights. They just, you know, why is this movie even set in Japan? I know it's based on a Japanese book, which we'll talk about later. But
yeah,
did it add anything to the film in this case? Like, not really. Not, I don't think so.
So do you think the biggest issue for you was making a connection to the characters of the movie? Is that, like, your biggest thing?
Just their motivations. You know, we have Brad Pitt. He's a fun character. The twins, Lemon and Tangerine, they were great. They were, to me, they were kind of low-key the leads of the film, not Brad Pitt's character, because I think they got, you know, the best backstory and a lot more character development from them. But at the same time, it's like, why am I watching this movie? What are we trying to get to? What are we actually trying to do? I kind of get it has that mystery essence to it. You know, they're trying to lead us somewhere. But did we really get that payoff at the end when Michael Shannon, you know, shows up? He's the bad guy. It's like, oh, that's, you know, the girl's dad and all that. It's kind of like, eh. Like, and he, you know, they do the whole backstory. So many backstories and, like, flashback clips in this movie. Some good, some not so good. And just saying, oh, this guy killed that guy. And, oh, it's like, oh, we thought Brad Pitt was the Ryan Reynolds guy. And it's just kind of like, okay, but so what? You know, you have these fun cameos, but cameos don't make a movie good. They make it a little more fun, but it doesn't really add anything of substance to me.
I think we talked about that when we came up to, like, the Doctor Strange movie, about, like, how cameos do not make a movie good.
Exactly.
And you already gave it up, though. You already spoiled it that
Well, I Ryan did mark Reynolds for spoilers.
Yeah, you did, but the Ryan Reynolds quick cameo, which I think was hilarious. You could catch it for like a second in the theater, so blinking you miss it, which I think was really nice of Ryan Reynolds to do, because I know he's taking like a movie hiatus right now after the Adam Project from Netflix, but that was cool. That was kind of like a thank you to David Leitch and Brad Pitt for having Brad Pitt cameo in Deadpool 2. So it was really nice, kind of a like, oh, you give me one, I'll give you one.
Pretty much.
Speaking about that, that's what made me feel like this whole movie was just an entire Deadpool remake. It had the same, it had the same cast. To me, it felt like it had the same effects, and to me, it was like the same shots. Like, for example, at the end of the movie, when Brad Pitt is like flying through the crashing train, and how he uses like the mascot to land softly.
Yeah.
Remember that scene? That was taken right out of Deadpool 2. When Domino is flying out of the crashing vehicles and she lands softly on the inflatable cow. Like, exactly. It's just like, it's taken out of it. And I don't know if it's like him paying homage to like his own film, but to me, that looks like lazy filmmaking.
That was Zazie Beetz, right? Who also makes an appearance in this film.
Yeah, exactly. So everything is just, I don't know, copy and pasted. And that is what really bothered me. Like, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, it's kind of actually surprising, because this is based on a book. And usually when you have a source material, it's easier to translate it into a film, especially something like this. Which is why it's so surprising when I watched this film. I didn't realize it was based on a book. But it feels like someone just wrote it like in a few weeks, and they just had this like cool idea in their head. And it's kind of like, no, you had something to base this off of. Surely this could have been put together a lot better, instead of, you know, just this kind of hodgepodge of ideas and misfired concepts, and kind of reusing the shots as well. It's a little cheap. I don't mind it too much, but yeah, it does come across that way. And I think it's less of a problem with the directing, because I think there's some great shots in this. It's gorgeous. The action is good. I think even some of the character moments are well directed, but it's just weirdly edited. And the writing, to me, from a script perspective, falls short.
That was a huge problem when I was watching this movie, was the editing. I feel like we were getting so many cuts. like back and forth. It was so off-putting, almost like you were being taken in and out of the action so many times, man. My head was spinning in a lot of ways. Like the background felt so forced. Like, here's an action scene for like 2 minutes, and then I'm gonna give you another 15 of dialogue and exposition. Like, it doesn't feel right. I feel like they could have jumbled all of that in the beginning and then made all the action part in the end so that it all makes sense. I don't know. I'm not in the editing room. I don't know what David Leitch was trying to portray there, like what his vision was with all these different cuts back and forth. Maybe he tried to give you the illusion that you are in a fast-paced moving train.
I didn't feel that at all. Where everything is
You didn't feel that at all? I don't know. That's kind of what I think that he's doing. Like, everything is zooming past you so fast that you have no time to process. So that's why we're getting action to dialogue so fast that we don't process it enough. I don't know. I have no idea what he was doing.
Yeah, but in a way, I actually like kind of feel bad because I was thinking about this halfway through the film. I'm like, man, I'm just kind of thinking about movies in general. And there's so much production behind the scenes. There's so much effort put into making these, bringing them to life, the costume design and, you know, the set design and all of that. And it's like, it's a shame because this really could have been, in some way, maybe like a Top Gun Maverick, where it's just a really tight, maybe 100-minute film, and it just works, and it's just great action flick, and everyone's talking about it, and everyone likes it, and they go out and see it. But you know what I mean, Andrew? Like, you really feel like this could have been a great film. It's still, it had, I still liked so much it. I know we're sounding super negative in a way on the podcast. We'll talk a little bit more about the good things.
I think we're going back and forth between saying we love it and then we hate it.
It's a mix. It's kind of like, wow, when you're watching it, and if you watch it, you know exactly what we'll mean. Like, there's times when it's just like, wow, this is really working. And there's times where you just feel like you're watching a different movie. And that just comes to me from experience, especially from the directing experience, the writing experience. It's almost like they just didn't piece it together properly. Andrew, I want to talk about Aaron Taylor Johnson, because he was one of the big standouts for me in this film.
Yes.
I thought he put on a fantastic performance along with his friend, David Tyree or Brian Tyree? I always mix his name up. From Atlanta.
From Atlanta. I he's also in The Eternals.
Oh, is he? That movie I haven't seen yet?
Yeah. he's like that tinkerer guy.
It's Brian Tyree Henry. I don't know why I said David. Yeah. But him, Tangerine and Lemon, to me, are the ones that really steal this show. I know Brad Pitt's in it, and Brad Pitt's doing Brad Pitt things and keeping it alive. It's like it's the same Brad Pitt you've seen in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. You've seen him in Ocean's 11, 12, and 13. You've seen this Brad Pitt in every single movie. It's still great. But to me, Aaron Taylor Johnson, Brian Tyree Henry, Lemon and Tangerine are the true stars of this show. Little awkward dialogue at first, but once they really got into it, we got to see their backstory as twins and brothers. Got pretty emotional when you saw their scenes, and you know, when one of them died and how the other one reacted. It was fantastic stuff.
We can't forget that not only did Lemon and Tangerine steal the show, but so did Thomas the Tank Engine. One of the highlights of the whole film, was bringing in that. I mean, of course, you know, it fits, right? Train to train. But it was just hilarious how well they interweaved it into the whole thing. I really did like seeing Aaron Taylor Johnson come back again. I haven't seen him in a movie in a long time. So, you know, he's making his rounds. You know, he's starting to get back in the film biz after, you know, his directing ass. Wife probably helped him out.
What was the last thing he was in? Was he Pietro in Age of Ultron?
That's the last thing I vividly... No!
I'm sure he's been stuff that after. I just...
No. What came first? Godzilla or Age of Ultron? Because he was in Godzilla.
No. Age of Ultron came after.
Okay. So, yeah. So, definitely Age of Ultron is the last time I seen him. But, I don't know. Like, quick.
I'm just remembering.
What?
Sorry to interrupt. I'm just remembering. I don't know if you've seen... Have you seen Tenet yet? By Christopher Nolan?
I saw, like, the first 15 minutes of Tenet.
Okay.
And I could not get through it.
Yeah, okay. You know what? I love Nolan. I'm a big Nolan fanboy. That movie's sloppy. It's sloppy as hell. Okay, I don't think it's a great movie. He's really good in that film. Again, it's another one. Oh, yeah, he is. Yeah, he melts in. I'm telling you, one thing I like about Aaron Taylor Johnson, I remember him most from Kick-Ass, which I know was a really long time ago, But he really...
Still a good movie.
Yeah, yeah. I love that film. He melts into the character in a way, like a chameleon. And I watched all of Tenet without knowing that was him the entire film. He's a pretty critical role if you go back and watch it. But to me, he's the standout of this show or movie.
The same way that I fanboy completely over Marvel, the same way Santi fanboys over Nolan. Like, that's who we are. That's what we will die on.
You're just a Marvel hater these days, though.
I mean, so is everybody else. So is everybody. Speaking of that, Aaron Taylor Johnson is Kraven the Hunter. I mean, what are we doing? Do you think that's going to be another Sonyverse flop for them?
What the hell is Kraven the Hunter, Andrew? What are we talking about?
He's the one who goes after Spider-Man in the comics, but he also goes. He's a Spider-Man villain.
He's a Spider-Man. Thank you. Just say Spider-Man he's bad a villain. Guy. Spider-Man but, bad guy.
Sony is trying to make their entire roster all anti-heroes, like Morbius, like Venom. I don't know why they're doing this. I do not know why they're doing this. But anyways, I want to talk about that real quick. I think it's going to flop. I think it's sad that they're turning Kraven into this kind of environmentalist instead of an actual, like, hunter and all that. But I just wanted to bring that up, see what you knew about it or how you felt about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not huge on the Sony multiverse of Spider-Man, but I'm sure they're just trying to cash in on the superhero stuff while it's a hot topic, and I guess we'll see. Venom was a hit. Maybe this one will be a hit too. Probably won't.
I want to see Marvel just like take that risk and like take one of their villains and like make it 100 times better. Like, what if Sony does like Kraven thing, and then Kevin Feige's like, we'll try Kraven and just completely make it better.
That would be fantastic.
I need them.
But anyways, going back to the movie, Bullet Train was a Sony film, by the way, Andrew.
I mean, I didn't know that. To be honest,
Sony made film. One of my favorite things about a Sony film. I'm a Sony fanboy. I love the place. I love, you know, PS1, PS2, PS3, whatever, all the way.
I love their cameras. The Sony A7R III, the best camera out there. That's what I have.
but it's just funny because every Sony movie, and I get it, it's like some character will have a cell phone and it's a Sony phone. I'm like, no one has a fucking Sony phone in real life, man. No one has that shit. No one has a Sony laptop. No one's got a Sony Vaio laptop. No one has a Sony phone. Stop putting your shit in movies. I get it. You're not going to get anyone to get that stuff, Sony. I'm sorry. It's not going to work.
So that's why we were seeing all those janky-ass looking phones, right?
Yes, that's why. Because they only put their own products in their films.
Didn't think about that. I was like, why does this look like something from like 2008? Like, this phone looks so outdated.
what do you guys expect? I mean, God knows what kind of... What's their phone called? I forget.
God, yeah, I know we're talking
Sony
about
Ericsson.
Too, but yeah, no.
Oh my goodness, Andrew, you had some good info on Kotaro Isaka, who wrote the book Bullet Train, translating to Maria Beetle, which this movie is based off of. Can you give us a little bit more about that?
You threw a lot at me because I really don't know too much. Except, yeah, it came from that novel. It was one of Japan's most popular crime thrillers at the time. And then it just recently got released internationally when it was translated to Bullet Train. But there was a lot of backlash from this. Have you been hearing about that? The whitewashing of the characters?
I have been. You want to expand a little bit more on that?
Yeah, there's been a little bit of a hoopla out on the... in the space, talking about how there wasn't enough Asian characters, and at one point, I believe, I'm so sorry, I don't remember the name of the agency or the group, but it's a group that pretty much promotes Asian actors in films, and they came out saying that they feel like this movie was an example of, again, not giving an Asian a lead, even though they saw that it was possible, like Crazy Rich Asians, and they extended it to Shang-Chi. And they wanted to see more of that. And the author of the original novel, Kotaro Isaka, he even said himself, like, no, Brad Pitt's a good choice. Like, that's good. But I think that's going to be happening a lot. I know this film had everyone, though. Had Latino actors.
It was very diverse,
Bad Bunny. It had African-American. It had Asian. It had everything. Yeah. Very diverse film. So, I don't know. How do you feel about this kind of whitewashing bash of this film.
Yeah, it's interesting, Andrew. I think these are important discussions to have when it comes to media entertainment and, you know, those kind of discussions. But, you know, ultimately, and it's one of my criticisms of the film in a way, is like, why is this set in Japan? Because it's just, it could have just been set anywhere. The fact they just did it, obviously to honor the book too, but, you know, because of the aesthetic and the lights and that sort of thing. But, you know, when it comes to films like this, we're dealing with, you know, international assassins, and I don't know what the book is like, but, you know, we got good diversity in this film. You know, sometimes you're going to have different races playing different characters. It'll happen one way or the other. So do I understand the criticisms of whitewashing? Kind of. I think it depends on the film, Andrew. If you make Crazy Rich Asians and you don't put Asian people in the lead, it's a little weird because the movie is literally called Crazy Rich Asians. But it's Bullet Train. It's about assassins named Ladybug and Tangerine and Lemon, the creator of the book.
So it could be anybody is what you're saying.
Yeah, the creator of the book is saying it's not a big deal. And at the same time, you know, we've had so many, all sorts of different castings across every film where there'll be a book and some characters will be described as a certain race, and then they're cast as a different race, you know, whether it's, you know, black to white or white to black or, you know, white to Latino, vice versa, whatever. So I think we're just kind of at that time where let's just focus on performances, let's focus on the movies, let's focus on how the characters are presented to us. And I think with a lot of this stuff, like the backlash, it's really hard to say because we can't ignore it because they are important discussions to have. But at the same time, if it comes up so often, it's just kind of like...
But diversity is still incredibly important right now.
Yeah, but people get, you know, I think it's important for it to come. You know, both of us, you know, we're minorities, but it's important to bring it up when I think it's more relevant in a sense. And especially right now when the creator is saying it's not a big deal. It's just kind of like, you know, come on, let's just watch the movie and enjoy it.
Yeah, because I know, like, for example, Bad Bunny's character, correct me if I'm wrong, anyone who's listening, but I believe Bad Bunny's Puerto Rican, and I know his character in the movie was portrayed as like Mexican. So yeah. I don't think Bad Bunny's gonna come out and say like, or I don't think the Hispanic community is gonna come out and say like, oh, you should have got a Mexican actor to play a Mexican character. Like, I think we're just happy to see our inclusion, and I feel like that's how it should be going. I don't know, in future film, I feel like if you see your inclusion and it's a worthy part, you know, that's still a win for you because you're still seeing your representation. That's how I feel.
Just for the record, I don't know who the hell Bad Bunny is.
Oh, wow.
I've heard of him. I know
and, he's and then really you famous. Gave me and then you gave me Hold shit on. About not I, knowing I saw, Game of Thrones I saw a chart or Lord of the Rings.
The highest grossing like musicians of the year, and Bad Bunny was number one by far, just killing it. I'm sure I've heard some of his songs. But I don't know who he was when he was on screen. You don't think I have?
No.
I'm sure I have.
I think his songs are like 99% in Spanish. So I don't think you would have
sure come I've across heard it that. On the radio or on like a TikTok or something like that. Anyway, maybe not watching Lord of the Rings is worse than not knowing who Bad Bunny is, Andrew. Everyone listening to this podcast is going to agree with me on that. I guarantee.
Only people 30 and over will agree with that. But all of my younger generation people, I represent you. And we are happy to see Bad Bunny there.
I was happy to see him, even though his character was completely pointless.
Going back to the whole Sony thing. Bad Bunny is going to be another Spider Sony verse character, El Muerto, which is completely irrelevant, completely pointless. He had like two actual issues where he confronted Spider-Man, and they're making an entire movie out of it.
So, is this guy even an actor or what?
He's not. I think this is the very first time in a major film role. I think so.
Can I just say something about acting real quick? There are so many actors out there who I feel like they go to like the best acting school, they work their socks off, they got immense talent, and they just never get recognized because for whatever reason they just don't have that star power. And then we get, you know, some guy like Bad Bunny who's a musician, now he's an actor. I mean, is he good at it? I don't know, maybe he is, maybe he's not. Part of performing music is acting, I guess, and being in music videos, but it's just crazy to me when I think about that. And they get paid so much money where some people who we will never know about, Andrew, might actually be fantastic actors. They might kill these freaking roles, but they'll just never get it because the lack of star power.
I was gonna say, yeah, it's definitely, you know, your connections, like, you know, who you know. Obviously, Bad Bunny already has a relationship with Sony, so I'm mm-hmm. pretty sure they happily threw him in this one. But yeah, I think nowadays I wouldn't doubt it. I would put a lot of money on like casting rooms if they ask you like, oh, how many followers do you have on Instagram? Or how many followers do you have on TikTok? Like, can we use you and your platform to also promote our movie? Yeah. I think that's going to be a huge thing. So, yeah, you probably have, like, a great actor coming out of Juilliard or whatever acting school there is. But if they don't have, like, you know, 10,000 followers on their social media, it's not really going to do them any favors in the real world. So, it's kind of sad. But, yeah, it's definitely why people like Bad Bunny are able to get the leg up in this industry.
Yeah. Speaking of Bad Bunny, Andrew, he had a nice rocking suit on in this film. He had his wedding suit, had some blood on it, came over to the bullet train. I gotta ask you a question and our audience a question. Who was the best dressed character in this film? Who wins the fashion Oscar for this movie? Because there are some gorgeous outfits in here.
I was gonna say, this feels like we're on the red carpet right now talking about who was best dressed. Dude, I really liked Aaron Taylor Johnson's suit. It was a perfect like French blue. It was gorgeous. I think it just fits so well.
I got a ditto you. I think he pops off the jacket. He's got the suit vest on, opens up a couple of buttons. Not part of the outfit, but then, you know, the mustache and everything. It's just a great look. You know, he really killed this film. He looked fantastic. Special shout out to the mascot person who was the Hornet. Pretty cool mascot. I don't think that's a real anime or a thing. But you know, neat design for sure.
Yeah, I mean, if any of you are listening, ever watch this movie, you know, watch it soon. Or even if you watch the trailer, because they wear the same outfits throughout the whole movie. So if you watch the trailer, you get a good idea. Let us know what you think is who's the best dressed out of the whole film.
Yeah.
It'll be nice to hear from all of you. But what I want to go back real quick to the movie, which I think was the saddest part, is with Tangerine when he's fighting. What's his name again? Ladybug? I think it was really sad when Tangerine got shot in the neck, because the whole time of the movie, in the beginning, it was Lemon who was scared of being shot in the neck. And when they're talking about if he had his bulletproof vest on or not, and it was definitely a callback, definitely sad. And then we got that flashback of when they were kids, which to me, I personally feel should have been placed before the death, which should have been way more impactful. We would have been like more attached. But even then, seeing Lemon holding the train as a kid, and they were always like, you know, best friends, that made me feel some type of way, man. I don't know. I got a little sad there.
Yeah, like I was mentioning earlier, they were definitely, to me, the standout characters. And then you have the cop-out death. You think Tangerine died. He comes back. He's like, you know, where's my brother? And we know that, obviously, he had died. It was really sad. You have that great shot of them just sitting together. And, mm-hmm. you know, as the, you know, the sun rises and all of that. Those were, like I said, there's some really great moments in this film for sure.
And we got to give a shout out to the random character, Channing Tatum, man.
Who made
an incredible cameo, which I think is proof that he is perfect for like these comedic roles. Like, my God, that made me so happy.
He is. It reminded me just like the Channing Tatum we saw in 21 Jump Street and 22 Jump Street. That was like the first movie where we saw him. It's like, wow, this guy, he's not the rom-com guy we thought he was. Comedy is where he fits in absolutely perfectly. And what I really liked about his cameo was that he kind of showed up, and then, you know, Brad Pitt gave him the disguise. He showed up again. And then that was it. He didn't come back. They didn't make him, you know, some super important character. He's just a regular passenger, got off the train, and, you know, kind of went on with his day. That was what made the cameo to me work so well and just so perfectly.
And I think that that's a hidden kind of feature that I liked about the whole movie in general, how it was kind of introducing a lot of random people throughout the whole movie, and they weren't all necessarily important, but that kind of made me feel like we are on a train. And we're talking to like all these different random people who were on it, because I felt like if this movie was focused in like one box cart and like four characters, this would not have been like, you know, a train in the title of the movie. So I definitely like it. It was great. It was funny to me. I don't know. It definitely did remind me of like the his cameo in This Is the End when he has in that gimp suit.
Like, that was goodness. So perfect. I don't know if that gets made today.
Oh no. But one thing I want to mention about this whole movie is I like how David Leitch mentioned that he used Jackie Chan in his movies as like an inspiration for this one, which I think it was a perfect way of him paying homage to Jackie Chan, because I think a lot of action movies make the mistake that they use a ton of like jump cuts to kind of simulate fights.
Yeah.
And I think I totally felt that this was a traditional action movie where they were using like their surroundings to fight off their enemies. And I think a lot more movies should be like that. And it's more interesting instead of like, you know, hand to hand fist fights. And that's how I feel.
Yeah. One thing David Leicht, we've been butchering his name the entire podcast, I'm sure.
Yeah. I say Leitch. I hope it's Leitch.
Yeah. He's definitely an expert at action scenes. And that's why, you know, in a way, he was perfect for this film. And, you know, the action was good. It was a little, Andrew, thought it was a little more cutty, like, you know, a little jump cutty than I expected, but definitely still a lot better than the average fighting you see in our, you know, everyday action films. And I think to take influence from Jackie Chan, you know, it worked well for this film. Do you think that they try to negotiate with Jackie Chan for a little quick cameo? I know he's Chinese, but, you know, like this is an international film. Anyone can show up.
Man, I feel like, I think he would have definitely been against. I don't know. Maybe I think he's done Chinese things probably. Yeah, he does. No, I don't think he's done Japanese. Yeah, I don't think he's done Japanese things in his career.
Maybe the CCP won't like that.
Probably not.
Oh, fuck. I'm now on the blacklist now.
And now we're blacklisted from ever doing interviews in China.
Pretty much.
I think it's really nice because I know back in the day of John Wick, David Leitch, he did say that he wanted to refrain from doing the traditional method of action movies with a bunch of cuts, and he preferred creating long choreographed sequences to make the scenes feel real, which is great. And I think it was accomplished here. It's perfect. And I know he has a huge problem with Taken, the movies, because if you ever watched Taken, at the time they were great, but my God, you could count like 14 different cuts and like a span of 2 seconds of fighting in those movies. It's definitely a way to help older actors like Liam Neeson, you know, portray that they're younger and still doing all these things. But I don't know. I still like it.
Oh, yeah, I was gonna say the reason the action scenes in Bullet Train work so well is, like you mentioned, they're realistic. They come across that way. At the same time, it's an unrealistic film, and that's how you know the action scene is well done. Because I think my favorite kind of fight scene of the movie was the one where it's Brad Pitt and Tangerine just kind of fighting in like the chair, and that old lady.
Oh yeah.
Shh. She just gives him the shot.
That's Lemon. That's Lemon.
Oh, it's Lemon. That scene was just perfectly edited. Perfectly edited. It just worked the way it cut back and forth. And it's like, this is so unrealistic because they would be making a lot of noise and, you know, they're going in all these different positions. But at the same time, it looked natural. It just looked totally normal.
It's crazy how I was reading that Brad Pitt did about like 90% of his own stunts in this movie. Like, that old man still has it, man. Like, it's crazy.
He's still doing it. He got $20 million for this movie. I mean, when you're getting paid that much, you probably got the best fitness guy. You got the best food guy. You got the best home gym. You got some nice jacuzzi and all that sort of stuff. So I got to give him credit. Andrew, you know, speaking of Brad Pitt getting paid big bucks for this film, he's the lead. We don't usually see Brad Pitt in these kinds of films, and to kind of get him is, to me, it's a golden gift while he's still in his prime. Do you think you would have liked to have seen a little bit more from Brad Pitt, and maybe he could have been the bad guy villain at the end? Because one interesting thing is he essentially uses his enemy's weapons in every fight to kill them or take them down. That's why I think I whispered it to you at the end. I'm like, are we sure that this guy isn't the White Death? Are we sure there's not going to be some big twist at the end? Because Brad Pitt was kind of, I don't know how to explain it. He didn't really have much of a background, just a kind of, you know, regular dude, unlucky, you know, but, you know, well-experienced assassin. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more from him, given that he was the lead in this film, but it seems to mostly revolve around the side characters.
Yeah, that's why I remember telling you about this after the movie. It was like having three different storylines trying to interweave. It didn't work so well. I respect the attempt, but I think they missed it. It didn't feel fluid. It didn't feel natural. And because of that, I wish we did see a lot more Brad Pitt. I think he's starting to get his stride in a comedy films, which I think is what made him shine in this one. It was great. I would have liked to see him more, but sadly, Yao didn't. As a villain, no.
It wouldn't work.
But one thing I wanted to bring up that I think made me chuckle so hard, which I think was, I've never seen this done before, and it was so unique, so clever, that water bottle of view. It was so cheeky and clever, and I think it was hilarious. I remember laughing so hard at that scene.
It was good. I don't think it was great. I get what it was trying to do, but I think because they used that cutback so many times throughout the movie, I know that one was, it was like, it was funny because, you know, the whole time you have these character cutbacks, now you have literally a water bottle and it's, you know, being bought and, you know, brought here. It's good because just chucks it at his head. That's what it's good. I don't think it's amazing. I'm such a hater. I know.
I loved it. I think that was good. I respect you, David Leitch. Do it again. But one quick, did you ever play the game Ghost of Tsushima?
You know, I may embarrass myself right now. I did say I'm a PlayStation fanboy, but I don't have as much time on my hands. I have not played Ghost of Tsushima, but I know everything about it, yes.
Okay, you know everything about it. Yeah, so Andrew Koji, the son, he actually has expressed a lot of interest in starring in the live-action version of that game. What do you think about that? I don't have a problem with it. To be honest, I don't know much of the game, but I think that was a pretty cool thing that he brought up in one of his interviews. How do you feel?
Yeah, I think he'd be a great pick. For those of you who have also seen the show Warrior, Andrew Koji also has one of the lead roles in that film. It's a great show. It's on HBO Max, so check it out right now. I think it's a fine pick, and I know that they are developing a Ghost of Tsushima movie. I'm going to have to remember which studio is making it, but I know it's not a TV show. But I think it'd be a totally fine pick. And I think, you know, getting this momentum from Bullet Train is probably his best chance. You know, kind of have to go out and, you know, like advertise for himself and say like, definitely, hey, I want to be this guy, you know, let me do it. It's funny you mentioned the Ghost of Tsushima movie because that was directed by Chad Stahelski, actually he directed John Wick in 2014.
That's right. That's where sounds familiar.
So yeah, all these action movies and everything's connected. It's multiverse of all these action movies.
One last point I want to make. I think it was pretty interesting how like this movie took from a lot of movies before it. I don't know if David Leitch ever saw the Wolverine movie, not the Wolverine Origins, but the second one when he's in Japan. Because towards the end of the movie of Bullet Train. It reminded me a lot of the Wolverine fight sequence with the Yakuza on top of the bullet train in his movie. So I don't know if you remember that. I don't know.
Yeah, the one directed by James Mangold, right? Not the really shitty one, but the one that was actually pretty decent.
The first one directed by James Mangold.
Yeah, especially the lighting in that scene for sure.
Mm-hmm. So that's what it reminded me a lot of. But all this talk about trains, man, there's one thing I want to ask you and one thing I want to ask everyone else who's listening. This would be a little cheeky question for all of you. What would you say is the best train movie ever? And no, not the Polar Express. That is a train movie. To me personally, I would have to say it's either a close tie with Train to Busan or Snowpiercer. But what would you say is like your favorite train movie?
Yeah, I like those two. There's so many. I think the Source Code count as a train movie?
Yeah, I think that counts.
I really like Source Code. I think it's a totally underappreciated film. But in addition to that, 310 to Yuma. Although a lot of that movie's on horseback, but it's about catching a train. I gotta agree with you. Snowpiercer is all on a train. Snowpiercer. I know the movie makes no sense. Like if you think about the actual, you know, society that's going on there, but I love Snowpiercer.
You're just trying to feel special and pick a movie out of the random blue.
I picked like four. Taking of Pelham 1, 2, 3 is another one. You know, there's so many.
Let us know what you think is your favorite train movie, because those are ours. But if you say Polar Express, fine, so be it. The animation there is incredibly wonky and creepy. it's your thing. But, okay, we'll wrap that up. But before we do, we want to bring up a couple funny negative reviews that Santi was able to catch. So you want to bring those up?
Yeah, that's right. We're going to talk about some bad reviews, Andrew. Some negative, some actually very positive on the film. Poorly written reviews. Here we go. Rotten Tomatoes, the first review. I just won't say the names, but these are all verified accounts. This review says, I'll try to do it in my best English accent because it's talking about a terrible.
How about you don't do the English accent so we don't offend people who are English?
All right. Well, this reviewer says, a terrible, bloody, British-speaking movie. Hard to understand and follow. ... The only good thing about is Brad Pitt and his funny character. I want my money back.
Ooh. That's harsh.
Our next review. Oh, by the way, that review was 1 star out of 5. This next review is 5 stars out of 5. And here it is. It was like watching a Bugs Bunny classic with humans. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much for that fantastic review. 5 stars. In our last review, 0.5 star. Way too much cursing. Way too many F-bombs. Way too many times of taking God's name in vain. And too much bloody and graphic violence. I wish that I can get a full refund. It was that bad! ! And those, man, Andrew, are our bad reviews of Bullet Train.
God, some of these people need to remember what they're going to go see. I wonder if they thought they were going to go see an actual movie about trains.
I don't know. I mean, we got the 5-star review about the Bugs Bunny classic. You know, they really liked it. I guess
That counts. That counts.
Yeah.
I was reading an article from The Observer. I'll call them out. The Observer, they have a review here, and they say The Bullet Train might be the worst movie ever made.
That's just fucking sensationalist
bullshit. It features the worst assemblage of bad acting ever collected in a single film. There is also a poisonous snake.
You know, just the fact that you're talking about that review, Andrew, is that you achieve their goal. It's just clickbait. It's just BS. Everything's the best thing ever.
I fell for it. Ever. But it also gives Bullet Train a lot more advertisement. So it also counts for them too.
Yeah. Bullet Train has a 53% on Rotten Tomatoes. It looks, none of us here are sitting here saying it's amazing. It seems
like. But the audience score is high.
Audience score is 78%, which is high. It's not that high. But 53 seems kind of. Like I said, I can see the arguments taking down this movie, but it just seems a little low. Critics are sometimes like weirdly harsh on some movies, and on other movies they're like, you know, 7 out of 10 is good. Just strange. I get it, but lower than I expected.
What would you say as your review of this movie? So we're gonna get into our reviews now, or our opinions. So out of 5 tickets, what do you give this movie?
Andrew, I give Bullet Train a strong 3 out of 5 tickets. I know that seems quite low, but listen, it just doesn't piece together as well as it wants to. It's a lot of style over substance, but there's some great action scenes. It's quite funny. The characters are all really unique and, you know, somewhat memorable to a certain extent, and I don't regret watching it. You know, is it worth going out of your time to see it? Probably not, but if you do catch it, I don't think you'll regret it. A little over long at 2 hours and 6 minutes, but both of us, I think, had a pretty decent time with it. Andrew, how many tickets for you?
I'll start off by giving my rating. I'll give it also a solid 3 out of 5. Walking out of the theater, I did have a 2.5 in mind.
You did,
but
I remember.
I started thinking to myself that if this movie ever came out like on DVD or if it was ever on streaming, I feel like I would definitely have it in my collection. It's one of those movies where if you have nothing to watch, nothing to do, it's colorful, it's vibrant, it gets you excited and happy. I think it was fun. I think it could have been significantly shorter, like you mentioned. But I really had a great time with this. And
you think it has cult classic potential, Andrew?
Not a cult classic, but I give credit where credit is due. And this is a solid, well effort attempt. I give it 2 thumbs up because it deserves a 3 out of 5.
You know what was the best scene of this film, Andrew? The best scene. It was when the train conductor came by. He's like, tickets, please. And I'm like, that's us. That's us. Tickets for two. If we were on that train, we would have been like, tickets for two. Here.
That would have been our perfect moment for a cameo. But I like that guy, Masioka from Heroes and from Get Smart.
Amazing. Oh, shit. He was from Heroes. No way.
Yep. That was him. Love that guy. Well, with all that put together, that's what we have to say about Bullet Train. Definitely could be a hit or miss. A lot of people are talking good and bad. Let us know what you think. I think that's all we have to say about this movie. So thank you very much, everybody. But we want to give a quick shout out to one of our good friends that we have been talking to along this entire podcast journey. I want everybody to take a look and check out Henry's Entertainment Journal on Instagram. Henry Perno is a great movie and TV review critic, and we love everything that he has done so far. Right, Santi?
That's right, Andrew. Henry's always putting up good reels, funny reels, reviewing all sorts of things, movies, TV shows, video games, has a fantastic Blu-ray collection as well. Great guy. Check out his page. Definitely one of our favorite people that we like chatting with about movies.
So thank you very much, Henry, for being a good friend of ours, and we do love what you're doing over there. So with all that, we want to give a quick sneak peek of what we got going on next week. So Santi, you want to tell them what we got going on?
Sure, Andrew. Next week, we're going to be doing a collab review with the folks at Nerdose Podcast. Really looking forward to that. We're bringing back movie debates. We're going to talk about the movies and shows we've been watching recently, movie trivia, fun facts, and a whole slate of other fun discussions. We're looking forward to that with the Nerdose Podcast, guys.
We can't wait to have Kyle and Zach on our show. So thank you very much, everybody, for listening to another episode of our Tickets for Two podcast. And we'll see you next time.
We'll see you then.